People today are trying to make their marriages work over longer lives than ever before. But staying married isn't easy, as many of us know. The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together, explores the pushes and pulls of marriage, where our need to grow as individuals can crash headlong into the demands of our relationships. My guest today is Daphne DeMarnef, clinical psychologist and author of The Rough Patch. Welcome to the show, Daphne.
Thank you so much.
With over 30 years of experience in mental health issues, in The Rough Patch, you touch on some very big subjects that can divide a marriage. Your real life stories are very helpful in the book. I want to ask you, though, what else about your book is different from so many others?
Right. So one thing that I began to feel as I was listening to couples in my practice is that they would find themselves feeling stuck or lost in their marriages, and yet they didn't really have a useful framework for understanding why. And I wrote the book because I felt that we all recognize the phenomenon that people go through in this rough patch. And people trivialize it and say, oh, maybe I'm having a midlife crisis, but we don't really have a way of thinking about it and a language for it that I believe captures how deep and meaningful these rough patches are. And so I'm looking at the whole life course, and I'm looking at how individuals can be who they are while collaborating and maintaining a close marital relationship over the long haul. And I don't think that combination of a consideration of the individual and the marriage has fully been fleshed out before.
I think that makes a lot of sense, because we've really gone through some changes in terms of socially. Back in the 70s, it was all about men, then it was all about women, and now it's sort of muddled space, and we are living longer. We are having a midlife thing, questioning our lives and what we've done and where we're going. And to meld those together with that person that's in our lives, because it's so easy to sit back and say, well, it's their fault.
Well, so if you look at the 50s model of marriage, right, it was traditional, it was conventional roles. Then we have the awakening and the revolution of the 60s, the social revolution. And part of that led to a sort of creation of the midlife crisis as a phenomenon, partly because we were living longer lives than ever before, so there was a midlife to have. And it was really about, how do I escape the shackles of this constraining relationship and sort of find myself, right? And a lot of the people who are now in their middle of their life had parents who were participated in the biggest divorce boom in human history, namely the 70s and 80s in America. And so they've got a bit more sober view of whether divorce is really necessarily the solution to people's intimate life. And so I think people feel a little more perseverance now around the question of, how is it that I can work out this relationship? And I think that's a very positive development. I think they're also aided by the fact that we now have 3 decades of extremely useful psychological research about relationships, about intimate relationships, about emotional development. And I try to put all that into plain language that people can use.
And I don't think, you know, I've been through my own situations like that, and I don't think that sometimes we truly understand how incredibly hard it is to actually go through divorce and go through those things until you're in the midst of it. And then it's almost like, oh man, what do I do now?
Well, I think, you know, not everyone's parents divorced in the 70s and 80s, but enough people's did that they see that it's not the simple solution that it might have been seen as in the 60s. And so I think anybody who's been through it, anyone whose parents have been through it, knows that there's a lot of cost. And so, you know, if there's a way, I mean, I'm very touched with how hard people work in my therapy office. because they're attached to each other and they value the life they've created together. And they're really thinking, if there's any way to keep this together, I want to try. It's not always possible. It's not always healthy. But I think it's a good aspiration to really give it the work it deserves.
I think so, too. And I think as I read through your book, the stories really resonate in many different ways. We're talking with Daphne DeMarnef. She is the author of The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together. And more often than not, emotions seem to come out sideways. They don't always get to the heart of what an issue is. And I'm thinking of anger or actions such as an affair. How do we navigate that? Why is it that we live our emotions without really seeing or knowing what they mean?
Right. So you know, this is, in a sense, I think, the revolution of the 21st century in our thinking about our psychologies. Okay, so I think not many of us learn in childhood. It's a really incredible advantage if you grow up in a family where people are fluent in talking about emotion. You know, a lot of people grow up in families where their emotions are treated as sometimes somehow a problem or bad. And so, you know, marriage can, in its best form, be a healing relationship where we bring the baggage of our childhood and we're able to have the kinds of conversations that we need to have and be honest and truthful in sharing our emotions in a way and be understood by our partner in a way that can actually heal us and make us more fluent in expressing ourselves. But this is a lifelong project. You know, nobody comes into marriage being able to perfectly express or articulate how they feel. But the real centerpiece of the book is saying that is the project. In other words, trying to understand yourself and the other person and be responsive and care about their feelings and your own is the project of marriage. And if you can do that, which the book tries to help guide you toward, you can weather a lot of really tough stuff because, of course, life throws tough stuff at everybody. And, you know, as you alluded to, something like an affair often is the expression or the outcome or the symptom of not really managing emotions in a healthy way in the marriage. And so it's devastating often to people, but it can be a vehicle of growth. Both people can roll up their sleeves and take it as an opportunity to be more in touch with and responsive to emotion.
And it's really trying to get past those imagined, perhaps, maybe some of them, not all of them, but some of them as imagined hurts. You did this to me. That sort of thing. And that does, that's time. And it is refreshing to hear that people are willing to do that. Are you seeing that? It sounds like to me you are seeing that more and more now, that maybe the people in their hitting toward 40 are in that position.
In which position?
In the position of trying to work a little bit harder.
I think so. I mean, again, I only have the sample of the people who cross my path as a therapist, but and of course they're a self-selected sample of people who are actually trying to work on their relationships. Sure. But I do think there's something very hopeful in the whole raft of research that is really helping us look at our emotional lives, because I think understanding that that is kind of the centerpiece and the engine of any intimate relationships helps people think, okay, this is an area I need to attend to. But the issue you brought up before of how hard it can be in a long-term relationship to get over hurts, right, and to process them and to come to some new understanding, I mean, that is a formidable challenge, but I think that part of being an emotionally healthy partner is to be able to take responsibility for what you've done that's been painful to the other person, to be able to apologize, and to be able to forgive. I mean, so many things, our lives are so complicated, right? And, you know, you might flare up at your husband for not, you know, remembering to pick up the kids at the right time. But part of that is you being able to say, hey, I shouldn't have flared up, I'm sorry. And him to be able to say, I accept your apology and I let it go. And both people need to have that capacity to be able to emotionally function in a healthy way.
Yeah. And you tackle some very large obstacles. What of the main ones have you seen the most of?
So, you know, the chapters are divided into different topics because I really wanted people to be able to come to this book, maybe in crisis, maybe dealing with a certain problem, and sort of get help immediately. Go to the chapter on money or the chapter on alcohol and get some insights. But I do think that money stresses and money misunderstandings are very pervasive in marriage. I think most of us aren't really taught to talk in any kind of practical or productive way about money. And, you know, often at the beginning of a life together, people think it's kind of unromantic to talk about the, you know, dollars and cents of the relationship. But I do think that whether you have too little money, which is an enormous stress on people, if there's a lost job, that's an enormous stress on a marriage. But even if you have enough money, it can still be an enormous stress, because money lies very close to our sense of identity, our sense of survival, our sense of value. Do I have enough? Am I good enough? Am I valued? Am I valuable? All these things play into money. And so people can get into what I call a seesaw mentality, which is, you know, if you have something, I don't have it. If you want this, I can't have that. Mm-hmm. And what money really calls us to do in a very profound way is say, okay, what's our vision? What are our goals? What are we willing to live without? What do we feel we should put our money toward? And that requires conversation and collaboration. And that is sometimes hard for people.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Daphne DeMarneff. She is the author of The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together. And I really do love the way this book is put together. As you had mentioned, that the chapters are separated into several of the biggies, and a nice brief history of the midlife crisis. You also have staying or leaving, and love is a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so love is a conversation is the final chapter in the book. And I feel that the book kind of leads you there through the discussion of emotion. And I do believe that ultimately love is about trying to understand another person and respond to them. And so I believe that the main human way that we learn about other people is through talking and through conversation. Now, talking about emotion isn't easy for everybody, but I do really take a stand in this book that it's something that's valuable to cultivate, and that whether it's easy for you or hard for you, it's important to try. And so I think that a long marriage is about many, many, many conversations that you have about problems that are in front of you, that some of which are joyful and lighthearted and friendly and humorous. Obviously, humor is a huge benefit in a marriage. But basically, continuing to engage and turn toward each other. And I think that when marriages really flounder, it's because one or both people have lost the desire to turn toward the other person, to depend on them, to need things from them. And so I really say one of the most important ingredients to a long marriage is continuing to want things from the other person. And that is something that's sometimes hard, because we freeze over and we seal over, we get defensive, we say, I don't want to need anything from you. But to keep getting in touch with your own vulnerable, soft core and the parts of you that are tender is really, really important. And that is an internal capacity. That takes courage, it takes guts, it takes a certain kind of integrity around staying emotionally open that I think is probably one of the key ingredients in staying happy in a marriage.
What might be one of the things that somebody could do to help the other person open,
mm-hmm.
open up a little bit, give a little bit of that of themselves so that they're... Sometimes men have a harder time talking about emotions.
Right. So I want to talk a little bit about that. And of course, one wants to not get into gender stereotypes.
Right.
But
yes.
I do sometimes think in heterosexual couples, things break down in a certain predictable way, where the woman is traditionally the one who brings up issues. And sometimes she brings them up only after she's reached the end of her rope. And so she does it in a highly emotional way.
Mm-hmm.
And men are actually flooded. They may look impassive. They may look as if they're not responding. It may look as if they're ignoring you. But the research shows, John Gottman at the University of Washington has shown over decades, that men are actually physiologically getting flooded. and overwhelmed internally, even though they're acting very calm. And acting calm is a way that they try to calm themselves down. So he looks like he's not responding. She gets even madder, and he floods more, right? So this is the basic template of how things can break down typically in a heterosexual couple. So anything that the more reactive, emotional person in that couple, and often it is the woman, can do to communicate in a neutral way, the better. You know, this is the exact opposite from the 60s and 70s model of catharsis and letting it all hang out. This is like, how do you manage your emotional expression in a way that's most likely to get heard? And if you're able to do it in a calm, compassionate way, not at that moment when you happen to be blowing up, that you just apologize and try to move on, but in a calm moment, in a moment where you're both present, to say, look, it's really hard for me that you won't talk to me. And I find myself feeling more distant and more sad about our relationship. And I think you want to be close, too. It's just very hard for you to talk. So let's try. You know, in other words, offer something that it has some kind of invitation in it rather than I'm already angry and critical toward you. Because I believe that deep down, what both people want most in a marriage is to be seen as a good and loving person. And if you're so frustrated with the person that you keep blaming them for being the way they are, that's probably a recipe for alienating them. I'm not saying this is easy, right? Because we all have emotional triggers and reactions to being not talked to or et cetera. But I do think it's something to aspire to and something to keep working toward.
Yeah, great advice. Great advice. My guest, Daphne DeMarnef, she is the author of The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together. I do have a couple of final questions. And one of those is really kind of the now, unfortunately, age-old question. How are the children of divorce affected? What's that line we draw where it's, I'm out of here and taking the kids with me?
Wait, so are you saying how does divorce affect children? Are you saying how should the adults be thinking about that when they're thinking of staying or leaving?
How does it affect the kids?
Yeah. So, you know, what I say in the book, and this is completely supported by research, divorce isn't a single event, right? It's the lead-up. It's the divorce itself, and it's what happens after. And what I see in the book is that I do a lot of, I summarize the literature on how children respond to parental conflict, right? And you know, most people who divorce, either they're sort of frozen and disengaged, or they're very conflictual. And so conflict affects children as well as divorce. So you can't make these clean lines, right? You can't just say, like, divorce does one thing and marriage does another, because marriages are very different and what's going on in the marriage is very different. And so what I try to say is, look, if you decide that you can't be married to your partner anymore, that calls you to behave better, not worse. You know, in other words, part of the challenge of divorcing if you've got children is to be your best self in that process. And that can be very hard because, of course, probably in the marriage you weren't your best self, right? You were triggered, you were fighting, et cetera. So, but I think the decision to divorce is a moment where you say, okay, my job here is to conduct myself in the most mature way possible in order to benefit my children. I don't think you can make an across-the-board statement about how divorces affect children because they're so different. And I think we've all seen divorces where both people are happier and healthier and the kids are thriving. We've also seen divorces that result in sort of catastrophe for everybody, right? So it really does, I believe, come down to how the parents conduct themselves and whether they're able to keep putting the kids first or whether they're so lost in their emotional pain that they start not being able to put the kids first. What kids need most from their parents is a sense of warmth and security and safety. So if you can keep creating that, even in the presence of your own turmoil and pain, that is doing a good job as a parent, and they will benefit from that.
Yeah, I've seen that in a few cases and seen the other in other cases. So exactly. Daphne, thank you so much for your time. Is there any last words that you'd like to share?
Well, you know, I do think there's two components that I consider to be the wonder drugs of marriage, and they're kind of subtle, but I think it's worth just putting them out there. You know, two couples can have the same profile in terms of how much they fight or, you know, the violence of the fights or, you know, how they misunderstand each other, but if each person is self-aware namely, they know what they're doing, at least after the fact, and self-responsible, meaning they're able to apologize, they're able to acknowledge their part in it. Those two things make such a critical difference in whether people can get through their conflicts and come to some understanding. And the tragic thing in my line of work is when people can't admit their own part in a painful dynamic, because that means that the other person is not going to feel understood and they're probably going to feel blamed. And so I think if you can cultivate over time an awareness of your own emotional life, of how you behave, of what you're doing, and what you need to apologize for, that's incredibly powerful in allowing you to get through pretty much any rough patch.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for your time. Again, the book is The Rough Patch: Marriage and the Art of Living Together by Daphne DeMarnef. I will have all your contact information, everything up on our website after the interview airs. And I guess the one last thing would be, what's next for you?
Well, I practice psychology. I'm going to become a columnist for Parents Magazine, which I'm very excited about, because that's going to allow me to speak to a younger audience about their relationship as a couple, as they're raising children, which is great. And I've got a book, Maternal Desire, that came out several years ago that I'm going to write a new introduction to, and it's going to be re-released. That's about identity changes for women when they become mothers. So I've got a few writing projects going on, and I'm also obviously continuing as a therapist.
Well, wonderful. We'll look forward to your articles. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye-bye.